It's appropriate to sing a song like that, Grace Alone. If you get nothing else out of today's experience of worship, I want you to take that phrase with you. Because here we are at the end of Lent, 40 days of Lent, and we have six left. So that means we've gone through how many? 34 days. That's right. I know you all counted it out, but the truth is, we're right at the end of our celebration of Lent. And or experience of Lent anyway. I'm not sure how much celebrating goes on, but anyway, the idea though is for us to prepare ourselves for Easter, which is right around the corner. And here we are today celebrating with communion because it just happens that at the end of Lent, it is our first Sunday of the month, and that's when we celebrate communion in this church. And so it all kind of comes together right here at the end of Lent. Now, I know that many of you will be here a week from Thursday, from Maundy Thursday, where we will recognize Maundy Thursday celebration of Jesus' Last Supper. That's a different experience, and I hope that you'll come back and be a part of that a week from Thursday, Maundy Thursday. But today, we are in this place, and it is communion. And as I think about it, the more I am amazed, not just at this foresight of the session to set the first Sunday of every month as communion, but I'm amazed that in all of the celebrations that we come down to this, just at the end. Let me begin by a story that I read from a book called Iowa Parables by a man named Jerry Schlammenberger. Schlammenberger. And this is what he said. It's interesting. The August of 1900, more than 250 hobos, tramps, and freeloaders came by train to a little northwestern Iowa town for their first annual National Hobo Convention. Now, hobos, what do we call them today? Homeless. Yeah, we call them that, bums too, homeless, whatever. They didn't change the definition. They receive free food, they drink free beer, they stay in free accommodations, they play games, they draw up a political platform and nominate a candidate for the 1900 presidential election, which, by the way, did not win. They are speaking about a tradition that is repeated even to this day, the annual Hobo Days in Britt, Iowa. Do we have any Iowans here today? No? Not one. Go. Thank you. Thank you for this sermon illustration. I appreciate that. Ohio is a wonderful, wonderful place. Anyway, the people of Britt have been inviting the hobos, the bums, the freeloaders to Britt each year, not because they deserve it, not because in some way they have earned it. They get their free food and drink and all that special treatment simply because they are hobos. Nothing more. Now let that roll over you because we're going to come back to this. All kinds of conventions happen around the country every day, but the annual hobo convention at Britt is very different because you see, they don't deserve it. They don't ask for it. They don't encourage it. It is simply given freely, given to hobos who haven't worked, who are quite often lazy, who are crude, dirty, dishonest, who have been arrested in freight yards, chased out of public parks, rousted for vagrancy. But in Britt, for this one weekend, the hobos, the freeloaders, the roustabouts are kings, and they celebrate their humanity. And for a brief time, they are loved for who they are, just fellow human beings. Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story, isn't it? You know these words as well as I do. He took bread and he'd given thanks. He broke it and gave it to his disciples. This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And likewise, the cup after supper saying, this cup which is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood. Jesus says, come and eat. All is ready. Come not because you deserve it, not because you have earned it. Come because it is given to you freely. Like it or not, we come to this supper as hobos come to Britt. We come not deserving, but accepting. We come to this grace banquet to celebrate God's victory, not our attainment, our just goodness or anything at all. We don't bring any of that with us. We come, though, as forgiven people who are nourished and renewed and refreshed whenever we celebrate our humanity in Jesus Christ, who has freed us from ourselves. We come not as perfect people, but as forgiven people. Here we come in celebration of the imperfect, those who make mistakes, those who stray from the straight and narrow, who foul up their relationships, offend people, tramp on toes, blow the whole thing. We come in celebration as we live in our brokenness and our low self-esteem and all of our questions and our feelings of unfairness with life. We come not as people who have control of life, but as people who have, well, lost control and have surrendered life to Christ. We come as people who are sorry for our mistakes and are tired of running our lives by ourselves. We come as people who are celebrating the grace of God through the body and blood of Christ. We come and we eat and we drink as undeserving people, people who wander between being enemies of God or friends, depending on who is controlling our lives. Remember that even Judas, remember this, even Judas ate and drank at this table from the bread and the wine. Judas who betrayed Jesus. Judas who Jesus knew to be the one who would turn him in over to the Romans. He was not excluded from the table. He ate and he drank. Judas was there. Judas took the bread and the cup and his body and blood shed for him. Here we have Jesus and his betrayer sharing this sacred meal. Again and again, the scene is repeated. We come to the table as those who often will betray Jesus as enemies. We come and we are forgiven and we are welcomed. And the table is not excluded from anyone because it does not depend on our merit, our work, our lives, our actions. The supper is a free gift from God to us. And it depends on God's action through Jesus Christ. And not ours. Now, why this particular message today? Well, one is that we have a lot of folks that have joined our church and visiting our church who come from other faith traditions, all of them valid, all of them wonderful. But I just think that it's time once in a while for us to be reminded why we do what we do. Because as Presbyterians, we do it a little bit differently. Now, is it better or worse? Yes, it is. I got to tell you, it's better. But I mean, no. You know what I mean. You see, Presbyterians messed it up for a long time. If you were living back in the 1800s in particular, and in the early 1900s as well, you would come to communion on Sunday with a coin in your pocket. An elder would have come by your house and examined you theologically that week. And if you were deemed acceptable by the elder, he, because it was always guys, another way we messed up, but he would give you a coin. And you would take that coin with you to church, saying, you are examined. You are acceptable. And then you place the coin on the rail and you receive communion. How many of you think that's ridiculous? Yeah, I know, and we did it. We did it for a long time, but then, of course, we also used to put tables down the central aisle, and everybody would stand up and receive communion together. That, I think, is pretty cool, but haven't done it in any church that I know for a long time. Because you see, what's wrong with that is that it's dependent upon you. You see, you're examined, and you are then pass the examination, and you can become a part of community. They built a rail, a guard rail. Sometimes it was a real rail. Sometimes it was just metaphorical. But they would to keep you away because you were not acceptable. Your behavior was bad, and so you couldn't have communion. You go to the hospital. Oh, I'm sorry, you've broken your arm. That's your fault. Go home. That makes no sense, does it? You go to the hospital, they're like, you broke your arm, let's fix this. You come to this table, and you are broken in some way in your life, and I know you guys pretty well now, and none of you are good enough for it. And I think standing up there to me is God's sense of humor, really, because we all bring our brokenness to this time together. None of us, well, all of us are hobos. And it is only through God's grace that we just sang about, only through that, that we can receive this communion and it changes us. We believe that Jesus is present in the elements of communion and what we call the real presence of Christ. That doesn't mean that his spirit, his thoughts, but really present with us when we share these elements. And so we do take it seriously, but we take it seriously in the context that none of us are worthy, and is only in that real presence where Jesus is with us saying, I'm here with you. This is okay. This is for you. This is for you. I love the idea that Judas was at the table. If it was good enough for Judas, it's good enough for you. That's the way I look at it. Now, I've been thinking that many have been missing the point of what I preach sometimes, the point in turning over to Jesus everything that makes you less than what Jesus would want you to be. If you feel you don't have anything to surrender, if you feel that you cannot relate to those hobos and Brit or Judas at the Last Supper, then maybe you don't need a God because you are your own. And to me, that is the most frightening position that we can be in, not needing God. When we look closely at the dynamics of the Holy Week experience all the way from Palm Sunday through Maundy Thursday and all of that, we're really not so surprised, are we, what happens on Good Friday? On the surface, it's like the triumphal entry is a grand celebration, but underneath of it, the seeds of the crucifixion are laying there. I want you to think about this week. Next Sunday is Palm Sunday, and that's what we will be talking about. Fred Craddock says that the triumphant entry was a parade, a protest, and a funeral procession all together. We've all seen the nature of the event as a parade with the throngs shouting their praises as Jesus slowly rides into Jerusalem. Perhaps we could understand this event as a protest, but most importantly, it was also that funeral procession. Only Jesus knew that this was the beginning of the end. Jesus knew the cheering crowds would stop soon, and they were going to call for his death. Leslie Weatherhead tells of a little boy who was admitted to an orphanage after his parents were killed. One of the first items on the agenda was to get him a new set of clothes, and so the nun helped him to find, you know, some decent clothes, since everything was really ragged, some new trousers and a shirt and a jacket and some shiny shoes that he could actually see his reflection in. And she tried to get him to pick out a hat, and he said, no, I'm good. And he took his old hat, which was really terrible shape, and put it on his head. And she worked with him for a little bit and convinced him that, you know, a new hat would be a great idea. And so he picked a hat out, but as he was picking up the new hat, he took the old hat and he ripped the lining out of it, and he put it in his pocket. And the nun said, well, why are you doing that? And he said, well, that's because that lining is from one of my mother's dresses. And whenever I put that, yeah, I have that with me, I feel like she is there someplace. Communion is like that for us. The bread and the wine are signs of God's presence with us, remaining a reminder of God and God walking the earth with us in the form of Jesus. Christ's love is present at this supper. It assures us that when he said, this is my body, this is my blood, he brings himself to us as a reminder of God's grace and love for us. And as we leave this place from communion, we leave with a bit of Jesus in our bodies, hearts, and souls. When we leave, we continue our faith journey with a reminder of God's grace, God's love. A piece of Jesus inside us as we go about our daily walk. We're like that little boy with the lining in his pocket from his mom. As we commune, we have a reminder, a sign of God's presence in our lives in the form of the bread and the wine, the body and blood. You see, not only is he present with you at the table, he is present with you out there in the world. For some, that means a time of judgment. For others, it's a time of grace and comfort, assurance and peace, knowing that the Savior is there as the Good Shepherd to care and uphold us in our faith journey. Perhaps the most neglected aspect of the celebration of communion is that here we find a sense of community, a friendship with Christ and with each other. None of us eats alone. We are all in this together. You know, we've been talking about the ways that we serve, and some of you, it's been a long time since we passed it in the pews, haven't we? And some of you really like that, and we will do that some in the future. We're going to keep having you come forward because of something someone said to me one time. I resist changing too much because she said, when we do communion, I don't really like anything else going on because it's between me and Jesus. So wrong. So she missed it so much. It is not between Jesus and you, your own little just me and Jesus being here together. It's me and Marilyn and Jesus, and me and Charlie and Jesus, and me and Bill. And it's us. It's all of us together. That's why when we all come forward, there's a certain rightness about that. Now, sharing it in the pews is fine too, just as long as you don't start to think that it's just you and Jesus in your little place there, because it is us as a community. You're not in this alone. There's a great story. I mean, I would love to feel that at all times, but a story of some children in a school that was being desegregated. A white mother was very, very worried about her little girl's first day in the first grade, and there'd be a lot of black children there, and she didn't know how things would go. But because of her religious upbringing, she said nothing that would worry her daughter. She just kept it to herself. Took the child to school on the first day, and then with trepidation at the end of the school day, she went to pick her up, and the little girl came running out of school. "Oh, Mommy, Mommy," she said. "Guess what?" "What, honey?" she said with a little tremble in her voice. "Today, I sat next to a little black girl." "And what happened, honey?" And mother asked, although she wasn't quite sure she wanted to know. She said, "Well," in kind of a confidential, conspiratorial voice, she said, "we were both so scared, we sat with each other all day long and held hands." See, Jesus wanted the disciples to have that as well, which means you. Love is patient and kind, not envious or boastful, not arrogant or rude, a love that does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. When we come to this table of communion, none of us eats alone. We are all in this together, all of us holding hands. In Paulet, Vermont, they have an old train station. It got turned into a luncheonette. It's a little tiny place. And you know, those old train stations, you can still see them in some small places. But instead of a place for large numbers, there's just a few tables. And on one of the walls is an arrangement of coffee mugs. And anyone in the little town can bring his or her own coffee mug and hang it up on the wall and know that it's there. And people that have come there to get coffee, as they look, they would talk, they would visit, they would notice, "Hey, I see that I see the Bill's coffee mug's still here. How's he doing? I haven't seen him in a while." If it's missing, if it's not been used for a while, it is a community center, a time of community, of sharing, of being concerned for one another. Now, food has always been that way, hasn't it? Bringing people together, sharing, discussing, learning about one another. And so here at communion, there should be that same sense of community, which is found in that railroad restaurant. But is there? Do we know or care about those who don't come to this table? Do we use this time for sharing, for getting to know each other? Do we have a sense that here in church we are family? Do we take time to know everyone's name, which now you're all plastered with? Do we see here in this community of Christ our friends? Do we see here people who are concerned about us as we are concerned about them? I hope so. I believe we do. The only church I know that does a moment for to greet each other, the peace, is this church, frankly. Other churches don't seem to do it quite so much, and if they do, good for them. Why would I know? I'm always here. So you guys might, you know, my experience level is somewhat limited to here. 3 times a month, Jermaine Washington and Michelle Stevens, they get together, and they have a meal. They call it their gratitude meal. But gratitude, gratitude for what? They're just friends. That's how they describe it, just friends. And they meet where they met at work and had lunch a few times together. But one day, Michelle admitted that she had kidney problems and was on dialysis. And it gave her headaches. It made her feel ill so many times. She'd been on a kidney transfer list for 11 months, and she was being sustained through dialysis. It was chronic fatigue and blackouts and just plagued by pain. And because Washington couldn't stand the thought of watching his friend in such misery, he gave her one of his kidneys. And when you've got something great to be thankful for, having a gratitude lunch. Sounds like a pretty good idea, doesn't it? Yeah. Don't you have something for which you are grateful? Doesn't that gratitude fill you with joy and praise? If so, let's hear it. The hobo's a Brit, the orphan boy with a piece of lining in his pocket, and this wonderful community of friends at First Presbyterian Church are all present here with each of us as we come to eat and to drink, to partake of the bread and the wine, the body and blood. And so praise ye the Lord, the Almighty. Let us stand up and let's sing our hearts out. Please stand.